Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to the Free Cities Podcast, episode 26. It's going to be a brief intro this morning, since this is a pretty self-explanatory episode. A couple of weeks ago, whilst I was in Montenegro attending the New Cities and Network States weekend at Zuzalu, I got to sit down with one of the founders of Prospera, Gabriel Delgado, and he ran over the latest news from the project, including buildings and infrastructure progress, as well as future plans and an update on their ongoing complications with the Honduran government. With regards to why we were in Montenegro, for those of you that don't know, Zuzalu is an experimental two-month pop-up city and gathering at a beautiful coastal location in the country. It began on March the 25th with about 100 to 150 residents arriving who've since been spending their weekdays co-working and their weekends attending talks and mini-conferences on themes including synthetic biology, technology for privacy, public goods, longevity, and of course governance, which is why we were there. The group will remain on the site until the end of May. Myself, Titus Gable and Peter Young were at Zuzalu, flying the flag for the Free Cities Foundation, and I have to say that it was quite an enlightening experience for me, in particular for helping me understand the many different facets of this movement and how our ideas fit into the ecosystem as a whole. Anyway, here's the Prospera update from Gabe. Don't forget to subscribe and review us if you so desire, and you can send feedback via our social media channels. And in the meantime, of course, as always, just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Gabriel Delgado. Now, what I was thinking, what might be nice, is a Prospera update.
Okay.
The latest news, okay. Because we've done quite a few Prospera interviews. I think, you know, we got the nuts and bolts, but okay. It'd be nice to get exactly what's happening.
Where we are.
Where you are, yeah. I'll tell you what, I just like 5 minutes ago, I Googled Prospera to see what, you know, like came up. And it's astonishing how negative the media is.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm looking at the top four results on Google search, and you get a Prospera test private city plan. Okay. But then it's biohacking company using controversial gene therapy. Then it's...
That's the MIT article.
Yeah. Crypto libertarian paradise lost its battle with Honduras. Go home, Honduran islanders fight against crypto colonialists. It's like... And I've been there, and I've seen the place, and I've seen the people, and none of that seems to be what I experienced in real life.
Yep.
It's still, so the onslaught is still happening.
Yeah, I think it's an ideological onslaught, really, more than anything. It's more, people have a certain perspective of what the world should be like, and we don't, we don't fit into that norm, you know? And so if you look at, like, the MIT piece, for example, it really was a hit piece. I asked, there was actually a reply from UFM, that's a university in Central America, that went really deep and did the research as to what her claims were and what Mini Circle was actually doing. And it's just, there's like a picture of reality and a picture of something totally pulled out from somebody's sleeve. It's disappointing because I don't mind criticism that is legitimate, because we can use that to improve our system, you know. What's really discouraging is when you get criticized for things that aren't really reality, and then there's really nothing to do about it, because what are you going to correct for? And there's nothing to correct for. It's really an attack just because of an attack. So, but you know, at this point we don't get discouraged anymore. We are moving forward, putting our best effort It's all a voluntary system anyway. Nobody has to go and do any biohacking stuff, what they call biohacking, which, by the way, is not biohacking. It's legitimate stage one clinical trials. And if they don't want to, you know, because you signed this contract saying, yes, I volunteer for this. So
what about this one then? Crypto libertarian paradise Prospera just lost its battle with Honduras. I take it that's not true.
That's new to me. You know, we're still building, and we have companies setting up. And I mean, I take it if we had lost the battle, we'd be shutting down. You know, seeing maybe selling some assets. None of that's even close. The reality is, we have right now about 1,000 residents, about 300 companies set up, and so that's ramping up. You know, what typically happens is, much as you must have experienced, when you get there and you actually talk to the people, not some of the foreigners like myself, even though I'm from neighboring Guatemala. So, I mean, I'm really a next door neighbor in this case. But really the people in the communities next door, the people that work there, the people that are working on the buildings, they're just enamored of what we're doing, for the most part, I would say. It's really helps move you forward, you know?
Yeah. And just the classic.
Look at more.
The classic is The Guardian. Go home. Honduran islanders fight against crypto colonialists. We did a on the ground survey of how many colonialists there actually were. And I believe, I don't know what the ratio is, it's like 99% Hondurans something. Do you know what it is off the top?
By law, it's supposed to be 90% of employees are Honduran. So if we go home, whatever number we have lose their jobs, basically. And thanks to The Guardian and others who, you know, propose this thing. Yeah. Of course, the articles like that don't encourage anybody to come.
Well, Gabe, why don't you just explain who you are and what your connection with Prospera is then, maybe. And then let's go into a quick update on all the latest developments, and then I'll put this one out quite soon, I think.
Okay, sounds great. So my name is Gabriel Delgado. People call me Gabe. I'm the co-founder of Prospera. I've been involved in these types of zones since 2009, so it's taken a while, and a good chunk of my a good decade plus of my life. We launched in 2017. I felt very, very, very hopeful for my region that we could get this off the ground, because the reality is reforming these countries in Central America and other places, it's just so, so hard. And the incentives are so misaligned, so completely misaligned, that my perspective is, after trying to reform in country, is that you have to find a way to reform outside of the system. So I became involved in 2009. This is my fourth try. I did one try in Guatemala, two previous tries in Honduras, and this third try in Honduras was the charm. We actually got everything off the ground and been operational. There's buildings on the ground, there's employees, there's people living and thriving there, so it's great.
Can you talk, before we go into Prospera, can you just talk a little bit about the ones that didn't work and what happened?
So what happened was... I'm affiliated with UFM in Guatemala, this university. And the president of UFM at the time pointed to the fact that Honduras was doing a really interesting reform internally. They were going to create these special autonomous regions inside the country, very similar to what Hong Kong had been. He told a number of us, this is really amazing. He explained why. I, of course, immediately got it. I got very, very enthusiastic, and I formed a group in Guatemala to try to lobby the incoming government to do the same. So we met with them a number of times. The party that won going into power, I met with the Minister of Economics, and he said, this should be the emblematic project of the government going in. So I was very enthusiastic that, you know, we had a chance to get it done. And immediately when they took over in government, they just got swallowed by the system and mired in the bog and just could not move forward with anything that we tried. So I insisted a couple of times. I saw that it wasn't going anywhere. So I decided that Honduras was so far ahead of the game already, just in the framework that they had created, that the most logical thing to do was to actually make sure that Honduras got off the ground. And then when they got off the ground and it was successful there, all of the countries in the region would have to react just because of competition. Kind of like what's happened with El Salvador these days in Bitcoin, you know, and all of the attention that's attracted. Yeah, so then I became involved with a group in Honduras. We actually signed an MOU with the government. The project had been under a regime that was decreed unconstitutional by the Honduran government. It was called the Special Economic Development Regions. So they declared unconstitutional. The project fell off the charts, fell off the possibilities of being enabled. So the guys in the Honduran government who had created the system basically fixed the unconstitutionalities and presented a new project of what eventually became the Zetas, the regime we're under now, right now. So I had two huge disappointments already, one in Guatemala, the one in Honduras. The first one in Honduras was even more disappointing because we had land scoped out. We had a master plan. We had put down money for options. We had an MOU signed. We had basically designed a lot of the concepts of the governance platform. And I didn't, you know, after that failure, I almost didn't want to have anything else to do with it. It had been 5 years. But I got pulled back in, you know, I got pulled back in because I just think that it's such a powerful way to reform. And really, I think that our region is so well positioned to do well in the world if we can just get around some of the dumb incentive structures that exist, or unproductive, to use a better language. So then, you know, what happened was we started a new initiative and that turned into Prosper eventually. I joined forces with Eric Brim, and he had a project doing things elsewhere. And we decided we worked together to do it in Honduras and make the first project in the world, the 0-1 of these types of jurisdictions from a private perspective, a thing that was a reality. And then the hypothesis, can I tell you really what the hypothesis is here?
Sure,
so the
yeah.
hypothesis is a wonderful hypothesis. Because you can't reform from within the system, where it's very, very difficult, or it's sort of the long defeat. Tolkien used to talk about the long defeat in his Lord of the Rings, and I love that analogy. So by becoming successful and prosperous, 0-1, we showcase that we can drive prosperity, and people, rather than choosing to leave their country to find opportunity elsewhere, choose to migrate within their own country and on the weekends go visit their grandmother, go visit their parents, be with their kids, whatever they want, but they're within their same country. So we change that paradigm to the point that other countries look at this and say, I want to replicate this within my own country. So now, rather than being a tool that their governments are afraid of, now it's a tool that they want to use because they see how it can drive prosperity. And I think that's what we're doing, because we already are getting calls from other governments that are interested in understanding what it is that we're doing. There are no projects yet, but interesting how we apply, you know, the principles that we have, and really understanding that this is a joint partnership between the government and Prospera. We're not setting up a new country and all these controversial things that are said about us, crypto havens, crypto, I don't know what they call them, whatever, all these name-calling things that have nothing, no substance behind them, but really are this tool in the arsenal. And it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Are you allowed to mention who's been knocking on the door saying, we'd like to maybe replicate this model?
I'm not, unfortunately.
Too bad.
But I will say that the conversations are happening at interesting levels. So it's not just some random person, because we get a lot of that. I'm hopeful that we will see, not just because of our efforts, but others' efforts, you know, in the next 10 years, a number of these, at least a handful of this emerge.
Okay, well, let's home in on Prospera then, and give us what's the latest news out of Prospera? When I was there, we were there in November. Mm-hmm. You had obviously the Beardy building was pretty good. Yep. Done, finished. Full of businesses.
Yeah.
No room for anything.
Yep.
Okay. The residential tower. The tower was
Duna.
The Duna. How's that coming along?
Well, we will be delivering in August. The original date was sometime in June. late June, likely. The reality is the government noise-making machine has affected the speed at which we can develop. But we will be delivering in August. So it's going to be 82 residences. They're aimed squarely at young professionals, young families. So nothing millionaire, billionaire, or anything like that around. It's a mixed-use building, office space, retail space, living space. It's beautiful. It's well thought out. It's a great building. So that's pretty close to being done. You can see, you go there and you see the structure there. You see the enclosings going up, the walls going in.
Is it going to be fixtures and fittings all in there as well? That buying apartments, do they just get it all, or do they get to sort of decide what they want?
No, they can buy a package of furniture if they like. The building's being delivered with fixtures and the basic, what we call white line. I don't know if that translates into English, but that's basically your fridge and these types of things.
White goods, yeah.
Yeah, a little stovetop and things like that. And then the package of furniture is, you have a couple of options and you choose whatever you like.
And what about the retail part of it? Mm-hmm. Is that just one layer at the bottom or something?
Yeah, that's the fourth floor.
Oh, the fourth floor.
It's the fourth floor. So basically the first floor is the motor lobby. And there's actually some retail space there. It could be a restaurant or it could be office space. So basically it's a drop-off zone if you're going to drop off somebody. Then you have three floors that are split, one-third office space, two-thirds parking space. And then on top of that floor, you have the retail space. And it's the views, I mean, you're invited to come have coffee on that level because it's just stunning. You have the Caribbean Sea, the reef, the colors of the water. It's just stunning, stunning, stunning. And then the residential starts on top of that. Really, the residential starts on level 5 and goes to level 14. On the 12th level, we have a infinity pool, really? Which is really neat. Yeah.
And that's part of the residence package. Wow.
Yeah. And on the 14th, the last floor, the terrace is a common area too. So you can have a rooftop there. And like I said, the views are spectacular. The sunsets, even the sunrises are amazing. You have 270 degrees of view.
Yeah. I mean, the view is pretty good just from the Beta building, which is very low down.
Yeah, it is very low down.
But I could just imagine. Okay, so one other project that was very much in the process when I was there was the
Circular Factory. We're almost done with that building.
Can you explain what it is?
Yes,
first?
Circular Factory is a specialized workshop, woodwork shop, I guess. It uses robots to take raw materials from Honduras, mainly wood, from certified forests, for example. And they're brought over. The wood is then taken by the robots, and it's cut into pieces of designs by different architectures in a manner that saves a lot of, it's more efficient in just the way it cuts the wood and it layers the wood together. It becomes cross-laminated timber that's very structurally sound. And you use that in buildings for either decorative parts or you can actually use it for the building itself. So Circular Factory seeks to improve the delivery time on buildings, both large and small. The first buildings we're going to be using with Circular Factory, the first buildings we'll be delivering are what we call Bayabu, which is a Zaha Hadid designed units.
What did you call them? Baya?
Bayabu. B-A-Y?
Yeah.
U? No, let me see. B-A-Y-A-B-U. Bayabu.
Is that a Honduran word or something?
That's a Honduran word. It just slipped my mind what it means. Right. I know Duna means, is also a word, a Garifuna word that means wave.
Right.
So we're looking for these, and for example, Duna is in our project. It's a Honduran developer's project, a company called Apollo, Eric Pizzicalis, who's from San Pedro Sula. Bayabu is a project that we're doing ourselves, but we're doing it through Circular Factory.
But the stuff that the Circular Factory is making, is that purely for use in Prospera, or are they creating stuff, and is that a part of a business that Prospera is also selling to the greater market out in Honduras?
Yeah, Circular Factory is actually an independent company from Prospera. Like many other companies, what we're seeking to do is have partners come and set up or tenants or co-creators or builders, whatever you want to call them, use the platform and actually build stuff, taking advantage of the regulatory platform that we've created to accelerate the rate of delivery into the market. So initially, Circular Factory will deliver inside of Prospera because that's sort of the test case, right? So, you know, they're going to be doing some pieces for Duna, then they're going to be doing a lot of the heavy work, heavy lifting for Bayabu.
Which are what, by the way? Bayabu.
Yeah. Bayabu are the Zaha Hadid units, the residences, sorry.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Right. In the Duna building.
They're actually on another site. They're more on in the Pristine Bay site, if you recall that
on the other
resort.
Side.
Yeah, yes. On the other side of it. Yeah. And they're, you know, the residences, the buildings are only up to, I think, 3 stories high. The technology is super cool. To choose and design the units, you go online, you have the Unreal Engine. Which actually designs the units, and you get to go through a process such as if you were building your own, putting together, you know, online, I don't know, you're a special designed piece of furniture or whatever. You go through a building process that's virtual, and then you put that in your cart on your e-commerce site, and then you hit buy, and that goes into you pay, and then it goes to the factory. It's built in a factory.
Wait a minute, but what are they? Residences?
Yeah, the residences.
Detached residences, or
no? The pieces are built inside Circular Factory.
Yes.
But the design is done online separately.
But then the pieces form together to create a building.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Exactly.
Gosh.
It's a bit of. Sorry, I wasn't clear enough.
No, I wasn't. I thought that side of the bay was kind of finished because, you know, there's a lot of buildings there already. But mm-mm. Oh, right. So there's plenty of land there that's being
plenty
also,
of land there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So and it's got its own master plan, its own designs.
But there'll be residences.
There'll be residences, and there'll be some high-end medical clinics there probably as well.
Wow, so wellness, that's very wellness. 21st century. So you design the building, and then a robot makes it, and then it appears. Well, who builds it then? It's not robots building it as well, is it? It's people.
The robots?
No.
The people put it together. They bolt it together in place.
Yeah.
You have cranes, and you have some people just assemble the pieces together as you would do a Lego building. Right. A Lego building.
And when are the first versions of those going to be up?
I believe, so let me think. So we're delivering the building in the next month or so, the building, the Circular Factory building. So the factory will be delivering. Then you need to bring the robots over. We already have them. We just need to bring them over, install them, calibrate them, do some tests. I would say sometime in Q4, we should begin to see some of the Bayabu buildings, the pieces being built. I think first we're gonna create the Duna pieces that are basically curved louvers that go around the building.
Right. When I was there as well, there was mention of a coffee shop from which you could view the robots working.
Yeah.
Is that still happening?
That's still happening. We call it, you know, the building is very beautiful. It's got these slanting opposing roofs. Double or triple height, and we wanted to showcase the robots in action, but you couldn't do it from inside of the factory because, you know, it'd be dangerous and all this. So what we did is we created this beer garden concept, which sits, there's a huge pane of glass in front of the robots that are working, and behind that pane of glass there's this patio that's open up to the gardens and everything. And from there, you're going to have coffee, you're going to have a beer, and watch the robots just going about cutting and putting together all the pieces. It's actually quite cool and techy. Absolutely.
You're telling me, yeah. So what else then?
Well, one other thing about Duna is that the current plan is to be able to do drone deliveries to the roof of Duna.
From where?
From different parts of the island. So from anything from, you want to get a pizza, and it's on the west end of the island, the drone flies out there, you know, picks it up and brings it back. We already have the drone company already exists, already has a company inside of Prospera. We've already tested the drones, and they're the ones setting it up. So that's a very interesting option that we're exploring.
Does that exist anywhere else in the world already?
You know, there's deliveries of things like medicines. This company that we're partnering with, they're founded in Ecuador. The company's called Aerial Loop. And they deliver medicines and all kinds of things in Quito, in Ecuador. Now they're opening up in one of the cities of Colombia. And it really helps cut down on delivery times for, you know, urgent things from medical devices, but it can also take a couple of pizzas. So what we did with them is that we helped them showcase their model through the regulatory environment. You know, because going through the regulatory permitting, it takes time in many of these countries, and many politicians don't even know what to expect, right? So they're careful; they don't want to take any risks. So that's what we're doing.
I seem to remember in Dubai a number of years ago they were
testing that.
Well, they were even testing flying taxis. That's, you know, cool. I've never heard of it actually.
Yeah,
coming true.
These guys, what they solved is they do what they call middle mile. So they don't deliver to your home. If you have different homes, they don't deliver to the different homes. They deliver to a central location within the resort or within the condominium, and then you pick it up from there. So the idea would be that it would fly to the rooftop of the building, delivering the rooftop of the building. You go up the stairs, you go grab your pizza, you go grab your pharmacy delivery or whatever you want, and then go down to your apartment.
It's phenomenal, isn't it?
All the things you can do, right, with a little bit of freedom.
Yeah. Okay, so apart from drone pizza deliveries then, what else has happened? That would have to be since I was there. I'm just trying to think. I mean, to be honest, it was, November? What are we now? December, January, February? It was almost 6 months ago. And the site was still pretty, I'd say, don't take this the wrong way, primitive.
Yeah.
The beauty building was there. You had
dirt road
garden. You had gardens going down to the sea where you were growing plants. And
yep.
I don't know, what's that? What was that all about? Are they,
well, we have a lot of land, and we wanted to do a sort of a garden to market type setup. So we planted corn, and we planted watermelons, and we planted all kinds of different plants that we would consume in the restaurants of the hotel, and people could buy or whatever. And we did. And that's what you saw while you were there. It's still happening. You still go there. You see a bunch of plants, and eventually, what'll happen is we'll use that land for other purposes, and then we might grow elsewhere where we have other land. But I will tell you what's interesting is that when you go there, live there a lot, like I do, you don't notice the progress that much. But when somebody who was there a year ago shows up again, they're like, wow, what happened here? Because there's buildings everywhere, right? There's people, there's buildings, there's activity. And it's very encouraging to see all of that happening.
What about the current relationship with the government in Honduras? That's another thing that, you know, we know that there's, the government's changed.
I think everybody knows.
Yes, they're not as friendly as the mm-hmm. previous government. So can you update on what the current situation is there?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me just talk about one more project that we're launching.
Sure, sorry, of course.
No, it's called Pristine Heights. It's a beautiful project that is very high-end apartments or second homes, third homes. Designed by one of the leading architects of the Caribbean, Lane Pettigrew. We were probably breaking down ground in September. And that's another beautiful building. So we'll have, within the next 3 years, we'll go from zero buildings to about three or four different buildings.
Which part of the land would that be?
This would be inside of Pristine Bay, the resort.
So on the other side.
On the other side, right. And this is more high-end. So we look at it as Pristine Bay naturally is more of a high-end area for people just that are wealthier, because that's the way the resort was set up originally. There's golf and all these things.
Maybe you should explain that. People may not understand. Pristine Bay was already there. It was a former resort basically got left to ruin.
It was repossessed by the bank, because the previous owners unfortunately went under in some tough circumstances. And so there was a lot of infrastructure there. So just to take a step further back, the original land was all a greenfield. And so we needed to overlay a lot of infrastructure before we can actually get big, interesting things going. So the opportunity came to acquire the resort, and we saw it as an opportunity to leverage a bunch of infrastructure that already existed. So roads, water, internet connections, a resort, a hotel, and some clubs, clubhouses, etc. So that's what we did. So now we have the 58-acre portion, which was the original portion of land where the Beta building is, and the 58-acre and the Duna towers are, and Circular Factory is. And we have the Pristine Bay Resort, which is still a high-end resort. But we're now adding buildings that are for different markets in different locations where it just makes sense to do so. Ideally, these would be third-party developers coming in. So that's what we're trying to find, more third-party developers.
Okay. And of course, you didn't mention the Bitcoin Center, which is a former Montessori school. Is that right?
Yes, it was the original Montessori school. We now have a Bitcoin Center on there. I don't know if you knew this, but the first ever Free Cities conference in the world took place at where that the Bitcoin Center is.
I didn't know that.
Early 2010. Yeah.
No. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this is before, this was like right around when I was getting started. It was a great event attended by people all over the world. And eventually chance brought us right around and we acquired it. And that's where the Bitcoin Center is now.
Which is also beautiful. It's got lovely views as well.
Oh my God.
But that place really has.
Yeah.
Okay. Government.
Okay. So this is a very complicated relationship with the current government. So my sense is that they have good intent. But unfortunately, the ZS project in general was highly politicized by the previous government and by this current government in reaction to the previous government. And in politics, typically it is a zero-sum game, because whatever the opposing party says, I have to go against. Otherwise, I won't get any votes. So the rhetoric around ZS is very, 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 very high. And when they took power, there was no way for them to undo that without losing face, right? So this is like the context. Unfortunately, I think that we weren't able, and we have been thus far unable, to convince them to really come and take a hard look at what it is that we're doing, and for them to see that the claims against us are just plain false. All these claims of loss of sovereignty, all these claims of corruption, of abuse, of all the things, you know, that were accused now in some of these articles. I mean, the best way to figure out if that's true is to come and visit and actually look at the facts on the ground. Now, that's not happened. We've not been able to convince them to. And so that in the last year, which was the first year of government, deteriorated the relationship from the perspective of just being able to sit down and talk openly about what was going on. Now we have investors, we have fiduciary duties to our investors. Our company is founded in the US. It's a Delaware corporation. So we're under the Treaty of CAFTA, the Central America Free Trade Agreement. And that gives us a right to make sure that the government respects our acquired rights as investors. And that's what we did through arbitration. We presented a case at the end of last year. It's a very serious case. We hope that it's a motivator for conversations. We really want to resolve this, and we want to be able to execute on the great project that's a great tool for Hondurans.
Can I ask, though, the free trade agreement that you're in your conversations with the government, or in your lawsuit?
It's an arbitration case.
All right. Yeah. Are they saying something like, we want to shut you down?
The crux of their argument is that the previous government was illegitimate, so that everything that they did was it's a strange argument, because if you say that the Zetas were illegitimate, then it follows that all the acts in the 12 years that they were in government is illegitimate. And how do you reset back the 12 years? It just doesn't follow.
But also, how is it illegitimate if they were voted in, I suppose?
Right. So it doesn't make sense. They say it's illegitimate because it was the party that it's in power is the one that came into power after. It's a little bit complicated, so bear with me. The government that enabled the Zeta regimes was the party that participated in the exile of the current president's husband, right? So they view it as sort of a personal attack on the president, I think. So they think that this is the coup, the government that was there before was the sort of a coup d'etat government, so a de facto government. And they call everything that they did illegitimate, basically.
Right.
So it's and it's really, I think it's really political rhetoric more than anything else. You know, it's just a way to make sure that you have power.
On stage yesterday, in one of your speeches or at the, with Peter, you seem to think that you've got a good case.
We do have a good case. I think that, well, we have a good case because it's a good moral case. Morally, we're in the right. You know, if you make an investment and even if the laws change, you're not, you, by law, you that does not affect previous investors, so your grandfather did. So we, morally, we have a good case. Legally, we have a very good case. I think that what's happened, unfortunately, with the government currently is that they're in a weaker position now than they were a year ago. And so they find themselves in a position where it's more favorable to negotiate than it is to try to win this politically. It just seems like it seems, and I can't really affirm this 100%, but it seems like they don't have the, without recurring to violence, they don't have the ability to legally win the case. That's still up in the air, and of course an arbitration court would have to decide, but I mean, it seems that, like that's where we are.
The Central American
Free trade agreement
that basically secures all these rights.
Yes.
If they were to renege on that, what would happen? Like, would that mean that suddenly the U.S. government is involved somehow, or what would happen?
Well, the U.S. is involved already by treaty.
That's what I mean. What would be the result of them breaking that treaty?
Right. So you can go against investors in your country which breaks the treaty and not renegade the treaty itself. This is what they're doing. Honduras now has 5 lawsuits filed against it in arbitration. So we're not, it's not like it's just us that are saying the rules are not being upheld. But they have stated that, at some point they stated that they wanted to denounce the free trade agreement with the US. But that has not yet happened, so they're still bound by it. So what would happen is, you know, in the way they have acted, they have triggered a bunch of clauses in the treaty that favor the investor, in this case, Prospera. And we wanted to, before we went to arbitration, we wanted to sit down and negotiate these things, but we've been unable to do so. So we had to activate the treaty as it stands today. And the U.S. is indirectly involved because we are U.S. investors primarily. And we're a US-based company, so we check all the boxes as to which companies can act and to make sure that their rights are protected.
But would a potential result be sanctions?
No. The result. So if in the arbitration, if we're given an award against the country of Honduras, then Honduras, what Honduras would do under normal circumstances is pay the award.
Would it be a lot of money though?
Potentially, the arbitration case is for over $10 billion.
Wow!
So it's a lot of money, but
would they be able to afford that?
Well, the thing is that the stability agreement that we have is for 50 years. Almost, if you take $500 million, which is the investment amount we're in the process of making, multiply that, carry it out, the future value of that to 50 years, it's just an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
How much would we get? I don't know. Maybe a tenth of that, 20% of that, 30%, whatever amount it is, it's an enormous amount for the country. So, there would be a lot of things that could happen or that would have to happen to claim the award. And we don't know what that is, really.
So what would be the best scenario in which the government would save face and still be able to say, get out without, what would you say that would be?
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is for the government to agree to meet with us, at least figure out what it is that we want, what it is that we are seeking to do, what the reality on the ground is. And then from that position, and also from the acquired rights that we have, try to map out what they could do to make sure that we can continue operating with our acquired rights. And then based on that, okay, they go back and they, from a legislation perspective, fix things internally so that we can then be moved from one system to another, or they decide to just respect what we have. Those are the two.
And do you have any idea of a time scale on that?
Right now, I don't think it's going to happen. And the reason I don't think it's going to happen is just because the rhetoric on their side is just continues to be very anti-project. And so it doesn't make sense to me, but it continues to be anti-project. You can see it every few weeks or so, there'll be something, they'll be rattling the saber, you know.
Is there still political gain from holding their position? I mean, part of their position is it's a kind of like the colonialist side, isn't it? Which you could argue is good at rousing up people in Honduras to say, yeah, go and do, you know.
Yeah, the argument is a loss of sovereignty, but it really is not true, because if you look at all the institutions, they're led by Hondurans. PROSPER is the promoter of the zone. The highest authorities are all Honduran, and there's elections that happen after a certain threshold of population happens. So you can't even claim that it's undemocratic, because it's not. And then the authorities that actually approve all of the regulations that we have were Honduran. So it's the sovereignty agreement doesn't hold water. But you know what happens? You know how in politics you have to have a sort of a piñata, right? When things get bad in one angle, you just hit the piñata, and everybody pays attention to the piñata.
Okay.
I feel like PROSPER is the piñata, right. Basically. It's a distraction device.
What's your best guess then for how this whole thing unfolds?
I think that it's hard. I have some scenarios, perhaps, which would be a better way to put it. One scenario is we reach an agreement. I would put that at 10%, about. Another scenario is in all scenarios, we continue to push forward as we have.
Sure.
We continue to invest to create jobs, bring money to Honduras, as difficult as it can get. Another scenario is that basically the government, as all governments in Latin America, when their terms advance, they begin to lose more and more political power. They're less able to act without acting through violence. Violence is always an option, and hopefully we won't get to that. So in that scenario, basically what would happen is we would basically wait for a new government to come in and negotiate with a new government.
When's that?
That's still out, pretty far out, 2.5 years or so, almost 3.
And what's the current, what are the opinion polls with the current?
It's still too far out to say. It's too far out to say, and things can change quite quickly in these countries. So you think somebody's going to win, and then they don't win. But even if the same party won, whomever gets elected of that same party, I think would have a strong incentive to sit down and just figure it out with us.
Yeah.
Because by the time that comes around, an award may be getting ready to be served.
Have you noticed that during the election, it was very much a tool for a political tool to
totally.
And
totally.
Now they're in power. Is it as important? Is it
to
now?
Them?
Yes.
It's one of their big piñatas that they hit. Every time something bad happens in the country, they want to distract attention and sort of point in another direction. And they use the Zetas program and PROSPER in particular as part of that. I think what's happened, one of the things I will say that I think has happened, which is quite interesting, is that because all the things they accused us of haven't materialized, you know, there are no corrupt politicians, and we actually have third-party studies highlighting that we have no politically exposed people, no criminals of any type. We have, you know, the whole KYC that we've done, both to our residents and to our investors, is very, very strong. So there's no corruption involved. Then there's no there's investment keeps coming in spite of all the attacks. So that before they were saying, oh, there's no investment. Well, now there's a tower that's $12 million tower right there, sitting right there. You know, there's circular factor, another $1.5 million to $2 million. And then they're saying there are no jobs. Well, now we have about a thousand jobs. So all of these things that are happening are, the facts are starting to destroy the negative narrative. So people begin to think, well, hold on a second. All these things that they were saying aren't true. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. So maybe we're moving people from negative to neutral. And the people that were neutral, maybe they're starting to go positive. That's what we hope to continue to do.
One, something I heard from everyone there whenever I brought up the subject of, you know, what happens if, I don't know, the government just steams in and shuts the place down or something. And everyone said, well, look, we're kind of used to that in Central America. It's not going to stop us doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, the threat of dodgy governments has been around for many years.
Yeah.
But I
don't think that's going to happen, really, sure, because it's a very extreme measure. If that happens, they run the risk of making us victims.
Sure.
And I think it's not a good, politically it wouldn't work out. And most of the calculation is political for them in this stage.
But also the trade agreement would then kick in a major way.
Oh, yeah.
That would be an international incident.
Yeah, that would be an international incident. And it wouldn't be good.
No, not at all.
Nobody wins in that scenario.
Exactly. Yeah, I think even politicians can see that one.
Yeah. It's not something that you can attach a 0% chance of happening, but it's a low percentage chance of happening.
Yeah. Well, what am I missing in the world of Prospera?
We continue to have great events that bring entrepreneurs to the island. We just have a health summit happen a few weeks ago. We have a DeFi summit coming up in a few days, 5th to the 7th of May. We have a legal hackathon around DAOs happening on the 10th of May. These are all really important because one of the difficult things in the space is actually getting people to be on the intellectual excitement about zones, to actually come down and begin to use them and explore them. That's super, super exciting. The other very, very exciting thing, I think your longevity fans, with which I am one, and your medical innovation fans will have, is that one of the areas we're seeing the most traction is in the biomedical space. So really cool longevity treatments, really cool regenerative medicine therapies are looking at the zone. These are well-established therapies. This is not some fly-by-night operation. And remember, the zone as a small government, but the laws are very strongly enforced. So you don't have fly-by-night operations come in because it's actually dangerous for them to play in a field like that. So we're seeing a lot of traction there. The second half of the year is also looking very exciting with more of these things happening, potentially more of these companies coming down and looking at the environment, the buildings being delivered, Duna being delivered, residents moving in, Bay Abu starting, Circular Factory starting. So a lot of activity.
And what about the businesses that are there currently?
Mm-hmm. In what spaces?
Well, yeah, just what? You've got a bank, haven't you?
We have a bank. Yeah. We have a bank. We have a lot of crypto companies that are exploring the space. We have a lot of crypto financial rails that we're using. In addition to traditional means, we have a couple of medical clinics. We have traditional construction companies. We have a call center. We have entertainment just set up a Top Golf within the golfing area. We have a Guidepost Montessori, which now has a new location, which is beautiful, right inside of the golf area.
What Guidepost? What's that?
Guidepost Montessori is one of the most rapidly growing network of Montessori schools around the world. And they set up in Prospera about 2 years ago.
So the not the school, the actual company that runs
the
schools?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, are you familiar with them?
Well, I'm Montessori schools. Yeah,
I didn't. Yeah,
yeah. It never occurred to me that they had a. Well, of course, they've got a company that runs them. But
well, Montessori is a type of school, and Guidepost runs a network of this types of schools.
Right. So, will they have a school there as well?
They have one.
In Prospera?
Yeah, they already have one.
Oh, so yeah. It moved from the from the Bitcoin building.
Yeah. It moved from the Bitcoin building to the inside, to right around the edges of the golf course. So kids ride their bikes, take their golf carts in and that. We have a university that's a fully online university. And all these are supporting industries that are necessary, you know, to make sure that people that come in with families or are thinking of families have the actual building blocks to be able to live there and work there and play there.
Well, I think if you've not got anything else to mention, I can't think of anything. I mean, like I say, I was there relatively recently and it was, and I know I came with Peter from the Free Cities Foundation and he was there a year before.
Yep.
And he said the amount that's moved on is astonishing. And in fact, you know, he was holding his breath just in case it wasn't, but it was. It was astonishing the amount of progress that's happening.
You know what? I'll say one more thing. We actually launched what we call the Builders Network. Very cool bounties for things that need to happen within the zone, companies that need to set up, tasks that need to be done people can come and look at and be a part of and be a part of constructing and building the city. The fact is that we can't do it alone. As a matter of fact, really big companies do very small things. So we want a lot more builders to come and build alongside us. So we have a bounties for a bunch of things, and hopefully this will start the whole more of an effort to get that done.
What do you mean to incentivize these people?
Yeah, these builders.
Describe what the bounty would be.
So a bounty might be, you know, I'll mention a few of them. One of them is come and build a water company, or come build a mortgage company. These are just needs that we know we have. That if people come and build them, they can get these funds. They can be small tasks or large tasks. We're actually taking this off of other sites that actually do this as well. But it's exciting because it further aligns our vision of having partners come and build alongside us. And we are the promoter and organizer, but the city's going to be built in a decentralized fashion, right? So
right,
yeah,
phenomenal. Well, thanks, Gabe, and
my pleasure.
Good to see you and to get a good update. I think whenever I get the chance, I will, because it's a project that we've all got our eyes on. I mean, it is probably what I'd call the sharp end of the wedge, isn't it? It's the one to watch.
Yeah,
so good luck and thanks for chatting.
I hope to see you there in less than a year.
Yes. Okay. I'll make it a date. Thanks.
Okay. Good. Thanks.